It has been said that the eyes are the windows to the soul. Well, there definitely are windows to the world, but we tend to take our eyes for granted until literally we see a problem. I'm Kermit Poling. Thank you for tuning in for this edition of Health Matters. It's Healthy Vision Month. So today we are joined by ophthalmologist and surgeon Dr. Brian Lusk of Lusk Eye Specialists in Shreveport. Dr. Lusk is a graduate of the Wake Forest University School of Medicine, completed his residency in ophthalmology at Georgetown University in Washington. His father, Dr. James Lusk, has previously been on the program, well-known in this area, and was originally scheduled to be on tonight's show, but was unable to attend because of a biking accident. And Brian, I want to thank you for, at the last minute, taking your father's place, and certainly want to say we wish him well in a quick recovery. You can join in this conversation this evening with your questions by calling 1-800-552-8502. And Brian, again, thank you for being here. And let's just start in. There are many conditions I know that affect vision. And what are some of the most common vision problems that you treat in your practice?
In our practice, we specialize in treatment of diseases in the anterior segment or front part of the eye, such as cataract, corneal disease, such as keratoconus or Fuchs corneal dystrophy. Glaucoma is another common disease that we treat in our practice. But pretty much anything affecting the anterior segment of the eye, infections, inflammations, we see a lot of dry eye disease. At this current time, a lot of people are experiencing difficulties due to seasonal allergies. And so there's a whole spectrum that we cover.
The one I think that is probably most familiar would be maybe cataracts or glaucoma. But can you tell us what exactly is cataracts?
Well, a cataract, the best analogy is to think of the eye as a camera. And so your eye has a lens in it, just like a camera has a lens. And as you get older, your lens becomes more hazy and cloudy. Mm-hmm. And that's what we call a cataract. And a cataract is a little bit of a misnomer. It's not really a medical or scientific term. It actually came from the Greeks, who looked into the eyes and saw this white veil, and it reminded them of a waterfall. And so they called it a cataract. And so it's basically just the hazy lens inside your body's camera, which is your eye.
So cataract surgery then is one of the most, I know, commonly performed surgeries in the United States. What exactly happens during a surgery to treat cataract?
Yeah, cataract surgery is very common in the U.S. today. It's one of the most successful surgeries that exists due to our technology and advances in skills and techniques. And basically what you're doing is going in and removing that clouded, hazy camera lens and replacing it with a clear camera lens so that light can once again enter the eye and pass through unimpeded on its way to the retina, which is the film in the camera.
I'm talking with Dr. Brian Lusk, who is an ophthalmologist with, we would love to take your questions this evening. If you give us a call at 1-800-552-8502, he's with Lusk Eye Specialists in Shreveport. And they've also been an underwriter here on Red River Radio, which we certainly do appreciate. Again, the number 800-552-8502. So is surgery then the best treatment for cataracts?
Yes, surgery is the only treatment if cataracts are what is limiting your vision. Removing the cataracts is the only way to correct that problem.
All right. So you're talking about coming in there and taking a lens that's essentially faulty and replacing it with another lens. Are there different types of lenses? What are they?
That's a great question. Years ago, there was only one type of lens implant that was made to replace the cataractus or hazy lens in the eye. Nowadays, we really have a wealth of lens options to customize the lens implant better for each specific patient that comes in. And there's the basic lens, which still a majority of patients get, and oftentimes after surgery, they may want to wear bifocals to more properly focus the light after their cataract surgery. However, for patients desiring an increased level of vision without dependency on glasses, we have lens options that allow for correction of astigmatism, lens options that allow for correction of presbyopia or loss of near vision as you get older, and also lens options, different types of lenses that can correct some of the higher order aberrations of the eye, which are more complex and complicated than simple nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism.
Right. What is astigmatism, by the way? I know I have it, but I don't know exactly what it is.
Well, pretty much everybody has astigmatism. It's basically where your eye is not completely spherical or round. If your eye was a perfect sphere like a basketball, then you would have no astigmatism. But everybody's eye has some asymmetry or some asphericity. It's not a perfect sphere, mm-hmm. and that lack of perfect sphericity is astigmatism. So an extreme analogy would be comparing the basketball to a football, and a football is more ovaled. And so there are two meridians of curvature, so to speak. If you put a basketball down and roll it around, well, it pretty much rests the same no matter which side of the basketball you're on, whereas with a football, it always kind of rests on the long and flat axis. And then it has a short, steep axis vertically, and those two meridians of curvature focus light differently, and that differential focus of light is what astigmatism is, and that can be corrected simply with glasses. It can be corrected by the lens implant that goes into your eye with cataract surgery, with contacts, toric contacts, that's toric, T-O-R-I-C, can correct it, or even having LASIK corneal refractive surgery.
All right, we'll get back to that in just a little minute. We do have our first two callers are waiting right now, so we're going to go to Ben from Oakdale. And Ben, thank you for calling Health Matters this evening, and what is your question for Dr. Lusk?
Hi, I have been diagnosed, I'm 62 years old first, and I've been diagnosed with combined mechanism glaucoma, and that was at 35 when I found out about this, and I've been taking the best medication that's available to treat this. But right now, my situation, I'm still seeing a doctor, but I've got cataract in my left eye. In my right eye, I had surgery, but it's the worst eye, and they are very cautious about doing surgery or cataract surgery for my left eye. Now, has the technology advanced enough where we can take a look at what's going on in my left eye without risking any further damage to the glaucoma situation I've got going on?
I'm not sure I fully understand your question. It appears, so you said you have a cataract in the left eye, and then we know you have glaucoma in the left eye. And there have been quite a number of advances in technology in terms of investigating glaucoma. I'm not sure exactly how you've had that eye evaluated, but combined mechanism glaucoma means that there are several different mechanisms or reasons why you have glaucoma, which is high pressure in the eye. And the most common type of glaucoma is something called open-angle glaucoma, where the fluid that's produced in the eye has difficulty leaving through the normal drain in the eye. And that's typically just treated with eye drops. And then there's another type of glaucoma where the drain in the eye just simply gets blocked off by a cataractous lens in the eye, or due to the shape of the eye's anatomy, the fluid can't escape the eye as well. So sometimes in that case, taking the cataract out can help to treat the glaucoma. Did I answer your question? Or?
You've given me something that that surprises me. Yes, that helps me. I've been trying to keep up with the advances in glaucoma technology. But my biggest problem right now is cataract, and it prevents me from driving at night, and that's my biggest problem.
All right. All right, Ben, thank you so much for your call this evening. If you have a question for Dr. Brian Lusk this evening, we're talking about healthy vision and issues related to vision problems, then give us a call at 1-800-552-8502. We do have an anonymous caller now waiting with a question. And Mr. Anonymous or Miss Anonymous, go ahead with your question. Hello, you're on Health Matters.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I've been diagnosed with flashers and floaters. And my question is, does this eventually lead to loss of vision?
That's a great question, and flashes and floaters are a very common symptom that we see in our clinic. Flashes and floaters are basically they are a result of the vitreous gel or jelly that fills the back of the eye, separating from the retina. When you're young, that vitreous is it's very dense, and it fills the back of the eye and it's pressed up against the retina. As you get older, that vitreous degenerates. Instead of being a thick gelatinous material, becomes more liquefied, and the structures pull away from the retina. And you, as it's pulling away, that can create flashes, the symptom of flashes. And when it fully pulls away from the retina, then you can see the connective tissue attachments, which are the floaters. And the concern, what can lead to vision loss with flashes and floaters, is if when the vitreous is separating from the retina and pulling away, if it pulls a tear in the retina, then that can lead to a retinal detachment, which can be very devastating for the vision. So we always tell patients, if they develop an acute onset of new flashes and floaters, to get that eye examined within 12 to 24 hours to ensure that there are no tears or areas of retinal detachment that would need to be treated immediately.
Is this something that gets worse over time if you have it?
Typically, if you have flashes and floaters, it will... after the floaters develop, they remain stable, and over time they may dissipate. In some circumstances, they can get worse, but usually they don't. Usually they get better.
Okay. The number to call Health Matters this evening and talked with Dr. Brian Lusk is 1-800-552-8502. Again, 800-552-8502. John from Nacogdoches waiting online next. John, go ahead with your question this evening.
Hi. Fairly young, I'm 30, but I work as a computer programmer, and I've noticed probably in the past 2 or 3 years that I have times where I just can't focus my eyes. And it's not like I'm exhausted or anything, because it happens randomly throughout the day, but for 20, 30 minutes, my eyes won't focus, and all of a sudden it goes right back, and I'm fine for weeks.
Okay, there could be numerous reasons to explain your symptoms. Have you ever worn glasses or contacts before?
When I was younger as a kid, I used to have to wear reading glasses, and then as I got older, my vision improved and I didn't have to wear them anymore.
What likely may be going on with your history of having to wear reading glasses is that you may be farsighted, naturally farsighted, and a young person can typically accommodate or overcome that farsightedness. However, if you're doing a lot of near work at a computer for hours on end, you may be developing symptoms of asthenopia or eye strain, which can be a consequence of that farsightedness. Depending on how farsighted you are, you may benefit from a small glasses or contact lens correction to help with your symptoms. It may also be that your eyes could be drying out some. That's very common when people stare at a computer for a long time. Their blink rate naturally decreases, and that leads to drying out of the eyes. And I see that quite often in people who do a lot of reading and computer work.
When I was a young kid, that was before we had computers, right? But the one thing that my mom always said, oh, don't sit too close to the television. It's bad for your eyes. It's bad for your eyes. And, of course, we all sit near computer screens and all of that. Is that really true?
That's actually kind of a wives' tale. Sitting close to the television does not hurt your eyes. And I have a very young son who loves to sit 6 inches in front of our big screen TV and watch cartoons or TV shows. And young kids have an enormous ability to accommodate and to zoom in on things that are right in front of their nose. And as you get older, you gradually lose that ability, and it becomes difficult, and people find that they have to push their reading material further and further away as they get into their late 30s and early 40s until they get to the point where they just need extra magnification because their eye can no longer naturally provide that magnification. And that's when you see people going to the drugstore and picking up over-the-counter reading glasses, or coming in with a complaint that John has here, that he's just, you know, developing a lot of eye strain after reading a computer.
My guest is Dr. Brian Lusk of Lusk Eye Specialists in Shreveport on this edition of Health Matters. If you have a question about your vision or about vision in general, give us a call, 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. Jim from Colfax is waiting online. Go ahead with your question this evening.
Listen, I'm about 49 years old, and all my life I've been more or less, I've been pretty blessed to have really good eyesight, good and sharp, up close, in the distance, everything. My dad wore glasses most of his life, and my mother does as well. I don't, the thing is, lately, I've noticed that I could always read just the tiniest of writing, no problem, at arm's length, hand's length, whatever. But I've noticed these things are beginning to get a little blurry. And sometimes I have to root around and fish around and find a magnifying glass or an old pair of reading glasses with my dad's or something. And you know, I could see it a little better, sharper then. Is this something that is just a natural progression, something I should have looked at, or should I be concerned, or what?
The timing of this call couldn't be more perfect. It's a perfect segue from our previous caller, John, who was having similar symptoms but not as bad at age 30. I suspect that Jim is probably not as farsighted as John, but is developing some of the same symptoms of presbyopia or loss of that accommodation. He's now picking up a magnifying glass to help read very tiny print because he has lost that natural ability to zoom in on small things, and some people develop these presbyopia symptoms later than others. An average age range is around late 30s to early 40s, but there are some people that I've seen in the late 40s and early 50s that still get along quite well without reading glasses, but the symptoms that Jim is having clearly sound like progressing presbyopia or loss of accommodation, and he's experiencing that that syndrome that we all ultimately must face, which is aging and presbyopia and need for reading glasses.
Right. Mark from Lufkin is waiting next. Our next caller calling 800-552-8502. Mark, go ahead with your question.
Hello, doctor. My name is Mark, and my mother is 86, and she has cataracts, but she also has dementia, and she sees people at a distance. But when I take her to the spot where she's seeing this person, she acknowledges that there's nobody there. So I want to know how much of that is dementia and how much is attributed to cataracts.
That's a great question, and it would be difficult to know exactly without examining your mother, Mark, at 86 and dementia. I understand that's a very challenging scenario. A lot of times we find, though, that older patients with dementia who come in and have their cataracts addressed, if they are, in fact, significant cataracts, experience an increased level of vision and an improved quality of life, and that can actually help quite a bit in the dementia. If their vision has become very cloudy, it just leads to further disorientation of these older folks. But unfortunately, we would need to examine that patient to be able to give you more information on that.
The number to call with your question this evening, 800-552-8502. Dr. Brian Lusk, my guest on this edition of Health Matters. We're talking about, of course, vision, and the last couple of callers in particular in vision issues that get worse as one gets older. What exactly is macular degeneration? Where does that fit in here?
That's a good question. Macular degeneration is a part of the aging process, and there are some people who are genetically more predisposed to developing macular degeneration more severely and at a more early age, like a lot of different diseases tend to can affect people variably depending on their ethnicity. And macular degeneration is basically a loss of contrast sensitivity of the retina. So if you go back to the camera analogy, the retina is the film in the camera, and it's basically that film is becoming aged. It's been damaged from UV light over the years. It's been damaged from other environmental insults, and so the retina doesn't have the contrast that it once did. Now, there are two main forms of macular degeneration. There's the dry form, which is kind of garden variety, age-related macular degeneration, loss of contrast sensitivity. And there's the wet form of macular degeneration, where people actually develop so much atrophy or thinning in the retinal area that blood vessels break through underneath the retina and bleed. And this can actually cause, instead of the slowly progressive decline in vision that we see with the typical dry macular degeneration, this can cause a sudden onset of profound vision loss. And while people can profoundly lose vision, they do typically retain their peripheral vision. So they don't go completely blind, but their central vision may not be good at all. They may not be able to read many letters on the eye chart, but they can see things coming in the periphery, so they still have some useful vision.
We have Diane from Texas as the next caller holding online. Diane, thank you for calling this evening. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, please. This is a curiosity thing more than anything else.
Okay.
When I was in my mid-20s, back in the late 60s, I had my left eye enucleated, and they, cut the optic nerve and took the whole thing out. Well, things progressed, and then in the 90s, when I had to have my right eye done, they didn't cut the optic nerve, and all they did was, scoop out all the stuff, and they left the eyeball. And my left eye, of course, is just black. There's nothing there, but I constantly, in my right eye, get almost like lightning flashes, or sometimes a light in there, and I wondered if that was maybe the optic nerve still connected to the brain, if it was trying to see or what. Do you have a clue?
Diane, that's a great question. And so what you're describing, there are two different procedures, an enucleation where the entire eye and optic nerve is cut and removed,
right,
versus an evisceration where the contents of the eye are removed, but the sclera or shell of the eye is maintained. It's a bit, in most cases, considered cosmetically more acceptable and less invasive, but
much nicer to wear.
Right. But the symptoms you're having are not unusual for people with profound vision loss, and we see this also in people with severe macular degeneration. And I'm not sure whether or not it's actually due to your optic nerve sending impulses to the brain, or it's actually just the visual cortex in the occipital lobe that's actually just firing off and causing these visual phenomenon that you're experiencing.
Diane, thanks for your call this evening. We're going to move next to Susan from Jefferson. Go ahead with your call.
Yes, what is dry eye? And what causes it?
Dry eye is a very common eye disease. As people get older, dry eye tends to become worse. It can result from a number of different causes, from a decreased production of tears to increased evaporation of the tears. And your eye has to be moist and well lubricated. The cornea is like the watch crystal part on your eye. It's another lens on that camera analogy. It's the frontmost lens in the camera, and the cornea is actually not perfectly smooth. So if light rays were to come in and hit the cornea to be focused on the film or retina in the back of the eye, they wouldn't be focused smoothly. And so the tear film that coats your cornea provides a perfectly optically smooth and clear surface for the bending and focusing of light rays. So when the eye becomes dry, the vision will blur. And the most common symptom of dry eye disease is intermittent blurring of vision. And then people will say, oh, when I blink, my vision gets better. And that's because they're resurfacing the tear film on their cornea that was dry and improving the vision.
All right, you're listening to Health Matters this evening on Red River Radio. My My guest is Dr. Brian Lusk, and you can call with your questions about vision this evening at 800-552-8502. That is 800-552-8502. Brian, you brought up the cornea, so I know that you and your father are both cornea specialists, and you do corneal transplants. Can you talk a little bit about what those are, what they do, and some of the latest techniques?
Absolutely. So, yes, I did do a fellowship in Atlanta, Georgia, in corneal transplantation and LASIK, as well as cataract surgery. And the cornea, again, to get back to that analogy and explain the anatomy, is the front lens in that camera. Or if you thought of your eye as a watch, it's the watch crystal. So it's that front clear window or surface. And in order to have clear vision, not only do you have to have a clear lens inside the camera that we were talking about earlier, but you have to have a clear cornea. You got to have a clear watch crystal so that that light can enter into the eye, and the surface of the cornea needs to be smooth. And so there are a range of diseases that affect the clarity of the cornea, the smoothness of the cornea. And when the cornea becomes diseased to the extent that there is severe vision loss that can't be treated with simple medications or eye drops, then we can actually replace the cornea. And that corneal replacement will typically come from a donor cadaver. I'm actually the medical director at the local Louisiana Lions Eye Bank, and this is an organization that procures a donated corneal tissue. They procure it for corneal transplant surgeons so that we can then give the gift of sight to patients with diseased corneas. And so there are many different technologies nowadays, kind of like cataract surgery. Back in the day, there was only one lens that went into the eye. Back in the day, there was only one procedure for replacing a cornea, which basically involved removing the entire cornea and replacing it with a whole cornea from a deceased cadaver. And nowadays, we are able to replace the diseased layer of the cornea. So it's a more minimally invasive approach where we can make smaller incisions or only replace part of the cornea to achieve that clear cornea and that smooth surface.
All right. So this isn't a procedure yet where there's any kind of artificial cornea or anything like that at this point. It's
there are artificial corneas, but in most cases you will want to go with a normal biological tissue from a donor cadaver. The artificial corneas are only used in very severe circumstances where the body is unable to tolerate a natural cornea.
Gotcha.
From rejection or for other reasons.
Right. We have Annette from Baton Rouge who's tuned in and listening right now. Annette, go ahead with your question this evening.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I broke down and got glasses in my mid to late 40s and honestly tried to wear them, reading glasses, to do my work, but the way I had to position my, I was processing invoices at the time at a computer screen, and from the screen to the where I was reading, it just, the distance just didn't work with bifocals, and I just got tired of my neck would get frizzled, you know, by the end of the day. And so finally, after about 2 months, I just took the glasses off and threw them over my shoulder and said, forget it, and started processing things that were difficult to read early in the morning when my eyes were more rested, and then putting the much better print, larger print there at the end of the day. And my eyesight actually improved a good bit, and I just really didn't need to wear the glasses anymore. Well, now I'm 10 years older, and I'm back at a different job and work at a computer station, but no matter what I do now, I can't seem to get the same trick to work for me. So is surgery recommended? Am I just stuck with glasses? What's going on at the age of 58, 59?
At 58, there could be a number of things going on, Annette, and you would have to come in for a complete eye exam for me to make an accurate diagnosis. But this may simply be due to, again, that whole presbyopia and loss of accommodation, where beforehand you could focus on things up close without glasses. Now you are requiring glasses to see smaller print up close. Most people by the age of 58 are going to be completely dependent on reading glasses. However, In some cases, there are some people that may retain some ability to still accommodate and zoom in on things up close and be able to see well without glasses. You could also be developing some very early cataracts that could be contributing to your symptoms. There are a number of things that can be done from different styles of glasses, from monovision with contacts, monovision with LASIK if there are no cataracts, or if there is any presence of cataract that's contributing to your symptoms, then you could consider some different lens implant options.
All right, Annette, thanks for calling in this evening. Next up, we have Pierre from Bossier City. Pierre, go ahead.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my question. Mm-hmm. I have little black specks going back and forth in front of my eyes. Sometimes it can be a spot. Sometimes it looks like a hair. Just keep on going back and forth. I don't know what the reason for that.
How long has this been going on for?
It's been going on for years. About maybe 2-3 years.
Is it getting worse or about the same, the symptoms?
No, it's not changing. It's still the same.
It's not changing.
And it's not constant. Sometimes it is not there, and then all of a sudden it comes and...
This goes back to our second question or caller that we had, flashes and floaters. You're describing classic vitreous floaters. And what we tell people is when you develop new flashes and floaters, it should be evaluated within 12 to 24 hours to ensure that there are no tears in the retina or retinal detachment. If your symptoms have been stable for years, it'd be very unlikely for you to have a tear or a problem with your retina. However, the vitreous floaters that you're noticing never completely go away. Now, most people don't notice them as much as time goes on. Your brain tends to tune them out and ignore them, but oftentimes they can. Those symptoms, those same floaters can reoccur. If you haven't had a complete dilated eye exam, I'd recommend that you get one.
All right, the number to call for Health Matters this evening, 800-552-8502. Again, my guest is Dr. Brian Lusk, and your questions are welcome. And Karen from Gladewater has been waiting for her call, for her question. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, I have a young son. I'm 19 years old. He's had what's called a lazy eye, and he's more concerned or worried about having surgery than he is about his lazy eye. What I'm worried about is what damage could happen to him as far as like losing vision if he continues without getting it repaired or surgically fixed.
That's a good question, Karen. At 19, if he were going to develop irreversible loss of vision from the lazy eye not being treated, that most likely would have already occurred. Typically, what that is called is amblyopia, and that is where the eye doesn't develop properly because the eyes, the brain is not getting a clear signal from one eye, either because the eye is not properly aligned or there's something preventing one of the eyes from getting good vision. And when that happens, again, the treatment typically needs to occur before the age of 12 to 13 to prevent that onset of amblyopia. And once it is developed, usually it cannot be reversed after the age of 13. So if you're looking at correcting a strabismus or a crossed eyes situation, it may simply be to improve, cosmesis and the way the eye looks. However, I would encourage your son that the surgery is very minimally invasive and straightforward and easy to go through, and so I would reassure him in that regard.
All right. The next caller that we have is Ted, who is calling from Nacogdoches, I believe. Ted, go ahead with your question.
Yes, Dr. Lusk. I've been diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, and I'm just kind of not too familiar with really explaining exactly what retinitis pigmentosa is and how it affects the eye. And I've also been diagnosed with cataracts as well, and they tell me that cataract surgery can help out far sighting that I have, but how does that work with retinitis pigmentosa?
Ted, retinitis pigmentosa is that's a pretty complex eye condition there. It's a hereditary degenerative retinal condition where basically you experience progressive decline in vision. It's kind of like an early onset type of macular degeneration type of scenario. Unfortunately, it can also be associated with disease of the optic nerve, such as glaucoma and cataracts. So there are a number of different things that can occur with that. I'd highly recommend that you get dialed in with a top-notch retina specialist who can monitor that disease process. And in terms of the cataracts, if the cataracts are significant, they can be removed, and that can help to improve the contrast sensitivity, which, you know, when you have this type of condition, you really want to, you know, maximize your level of vision. And I have had experience taking cataracts out of patients with retinitis pigmentosa and have seen some dramatic improvements that in vision that I did not expect. So, you know, that might be something worth considering for you, but make sure that that you're being treated by a retina specialist and that the whole picture has been evaluated in terms of the glaucoma and everything else, because that's a pretty serious condition.
All right. Thank you, Ted, for your call. Next up is Sanjay from Lufkin. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi. You know, I'm right now 42 years old, and when I was 25, I had done RK in India, radial keratotomy, if you remember. So at that time, I had 4 powers in both my eyes, and it completely, you know, corrected it, and I enjoyed my 17 years of my life without glasses, you know, perfectly fine. But now, of like last 1 year or so, I've been observing that, you know, I'm having trouble, you know, reading, but it's a peculiar behavior. In the morning, I cannot read, but then as the day passes, in the evening, I can read the same paragraph that I cannot read in the morning without glasses, you know. So now I'm wearing the reading glasses as and when I need it, but I really want to, you know, stay away from, you know, reading glasses. Is it because of RK, or is it just a, you know, the age?
Excellent question, and I think your insight is very good. I think that age is a part of it, that presbyopia or loss of accommodation that we were talking about earlier is playing a role. At 42, you can no longer zoom in on a small print like you could when you were younger. But also the RK, I think, is contributing to your symptoms as well. And we no longer perform RK nowadays. We know that RK leads to progressive changes, progressive flattening in the cornea. That can actually lead to farsightedness. And we perform LASIK or PRK, which is a type of laser corrective surgery that reshapes the cornea in a way that leaves your cornea stable so that it doesn't change over time like corneas that have had radial keratotomy. And the reason it fluctuates throughout the day is that overnight your cornea is very well hydrated, and so there's actually some swelling in the cornea, and because your cornea changes shape from the RK, that swelling in the cornea causes a more pronounced change in shape in the morning, and as the cornea dries out throughout the day, the shape changes again, and this is why you have this fluctuating vision throughout the day. And again, you need to come in and have an exam and just see, you know, if there's anything that needs to be done regarding the RK, or are you just having symptoms of presbyopia, and look at some different options that may be available to you.
The number to call for Health Matters tonight is 800-552-8502. That is 800-552-8502. Again, Dr. Brian Lusk is in the studio with me. We're talking about issues related to the eye. A couple of off-phone questions from some people who wanted to remain anonymous. One is vernacular degeneration hereditary? Or I guess can it be would be the question.
Macular degeneration can be hereditary. Yes.
All right. And then the other one, it must have been macula. And the other one is, can marijuana be used to help glaucoma?
That's a good question. And surprisingly, there haven't been many studies that that look at that. The theory is that it can help to lower pressure in the eyes, which then reduces the progression of the glaucomatous disease. We have a lot more effective eye drops nowadays that lower the pressure in the eyes profoundly and work extremely well without the potential negative side effects of smoking marijuana.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have our next caller, and this is a return caller. This is Pierre from Bossier City, who is back with a follow-up question. Pierre, go ahead.
Thank you. I just had my eye exam 2 days ago. I'm 73 years old, and I'm a pre-diabetic. On examination, they told me that I had a little bit of diabetes in the eyes. Can you tell me what it is?
Sure. Diabetes is a disease that affects the blood vessels throughout the body. The retina, or the film in the camera, the retina is that film that lines the back of the eye, has blood vessels coursing through it. So diabetes injures those blood vessels in the retina and makes the blood vessels more leaky, so that the blood vessels leak fluid into the retina and cause swelling of the retina and thus a loss of contrast sensitivity. Also, because the blood vessels are dysfunctional, they don't do as good a job of delivering oxygen to the cells of the retina, and so that leads to further disease of the retina.
All right, our next caller is Dennis. Doesn't say where you're from, Dennis, but thanks for making your call tonight to Health Matters. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. I'm from Leesville.
All right.
Thanks for taking it.
Sure.
I have a question concerning prescription glasses and what we call store-bought glasses. Could you talk about those, the good and the bad? Thank you.
Sure. Over-the-counter glasses typically work for people when they're young, they don't need glasses. They have good vision at distance and near, and then as you get older, you still have good clear distance vision, but you've lost that ability for your camera to automatically zoom in on things. You've lost that accommodation. You developed presbyopia, and so you need extra magnification. All that over-the-counter reading glasses are is magnifying lens, equal power magnifying lens for each eye, so on either side of the glasses. And so prescription glasses are what a lot of people use because they have had nearsightedness all their life, or they've had farsightedness that they've had more difficulty controlling as they've gotten older, or they have astigmatism. And so they're not just trying to add that magnification to read up close. They also need to focus light at a distance, and so they wear bifocals, which correct distance and near vision.
All right. And next up, I believe we have Richard from Longview, who is waiting with his question. Richard, go ahead with your question tonight.
Yes, I've had a cornea transplant when I was 47. I'm 54 now, and I seem to be having trouble finding a corrective lens that'll work right. I wear a hard contact lens. We've tried the Synergy, and now we're trying the Piggyback. But it's like it just keeps my eye irritated constantly since I had the cornea transplant. Is there anything I can do?
Well, that's the unfortunate problem with having to wear or be dependent on contact lenses, is it does lead to irritation on the surface of the eye because you have a foreign material on your eyeball. And, you know, one thing you can do is try to keep your cornea more well lubricated or hydrated. Will make that contact lens more comfortable. And the reason you're dependent on these contact lenses is because I predict that you had a full thickness corneal transplant, and one of the unavoidable consequences of a full thickness corneal transplant is severe irregular astigmatism, because these corneas are sewn on by hand with anywhere from 16 to 20 or more stitches holding that corneal transplant on, and so there's irregular tension in those stitches, creating that irregular astigmatism. And a contact lens, especially a hard contact lens, basically creates a smooth spherical surface on your cornea, and that's why that results in the best quality of vision. You may look into getting a pair of glasses that might give you an acceptable level of vision without causing the irritation that contacts do, and then just find an acceptable balance between wearing glasses and contacts. But again, as a cornea specialist, I would need to see your cornea to better evaluate your individual scenario.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Our next caller is Rodney from the Alexandria area calling in this evening. Rodney, go ahead. You're on Health Matters.
Yes, I want to talk about double vision in one eye. I had it about a year and a half ago, and at the same time, I had what appeared to be an ear infection, it doesn't appear to be an ear infection. It just seemed to be some pressure over my temple. It's cleared up since then, and I just wanted to know, someone told me that it could be an upcoming stroke. I'd like your opinion about that.
So let me clarify. You're no longer having the symptoms of double vision?
That's correct.
Well,
I had it in one eye, and it lasted for several weeks, and I've replaced the lenses and the glasses, and that helped some, but then even now without glasses, I don't have double vision any longer.
Well, as you can imagine, there are many, many different causes of double vision, and what your friend alluded to is that a stroke can lead to double vision, which I want to clarify, true double vision can be caused by a stroke. True double vision is where, with both eyes open together, you see two objects instead of one. If you were looking at a friend, you would see two people, or if you're looking at a tree, you would see two trees. So, and then when you covered one of your eyes, the double vision would go away, and that's because the eyes are misaligned, and that usually results from a weakness of one of the muscles controlling the eye's movements, so that when you develop that weakness from a stroke to the nerve, that can lead to the eyes being misaligned and the symptoms of double vision. If it's really just one eye that has double vision, usually that is due to something with the cornea or the lens in the eye. So, you know, either the cornea is drying out, or there's some irregular scar or irregular astigmatism to the cornea, or there's some problem with the lens inside the eye, such as a lens implant from cataract surgery having shifted, or something like that. It wouldn't be a bad idea to just have a general medical exam and make sure that your blood pressure is well controlled. If there's any diabetes, that any cardiovascular risk factors need to be assessed and controlled.
All right, you're listening to Health Matters this evening. My guest, Dr. Brian Lusk, of Lusk Eye Specialists in Shreveport, and you can call. We have still enough time for just a couple more questions if you want to call at 800-552-8502. A couple of things that that I just made little notes on, because earlier on one of our callers you were referring to as basically as the eye ages, among other things, you have exposure to ultraviolet light over time. And I was thinking, oh, here we are, we're getting into the summer months, and we've been talking a lot about vision problems, but maybe we could talk a little bit about preventing problems and what we should do to protect our eyes during the summer months coming up and year-round.
Well, one of the best things is what you alluded to, is wearing UV protection when you're outdoors and in sunlight. Certainly, is a big field of research, you know, preventative medicine, and how can we prevent onset of diseases and take a more proactive role in wearing shades that have that are polarized, decrease the amount of light coming into your eyes, they can decrease the amount of harmful rays, and having sunglasses that have good filtering of ultraviolet light rays, which can cause generation of harmful free radicals mm-hmm. in the retina, and premature degeneration of the macula, and also premature development of cataracts and these types of things. Also, just having a healthy lifestyle, eating lots of green leafy vegetables has been shown to help promote good eye health, and increasing the ratio of omega-3 fatty acids that you find in fish oil and flaxseed compared to the omega-6 saturated animal fats has been shown to improve the overall health of the eye, all the way from the macula and the retina in the back of the eye to dry eye disease in the front of the eye. And avoiding toxins from smoking and excessive alcohol intake, and All these things can help to preserve eyesight.
You're talking a lot about diet. What about, because you see a lot of supplements that are advertised, or, you know, you can take this and it will improve your vision. Do any of those tend to work?
Oh, that's a good question. And there's so many different supplements out there. Some of them are gimmicks, and then some of them actually do have helpful properties, such as the supplements that have the omega-3s. Mm-hmm. And sure. The National Eye Institute did a study where they looked at some different vitamins that they found reduced the chances of macular degeneration progressing. Vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, copper, some different things, beta carotene that are in these formulations that you can get over the counter. And typically if it says AREDS, AREDS, or AREDS 2, then those have the proper formulation if you're looking for a supplement or an eye vitamin to take.
So when we were told to eat your carrots to have a good eyesight, there was probably something to
that. There's something to that, absolutely.
That's great. Floyd from Haughton is next in line, waiting with your call. Floyd, go ahead. Floyd, are you still there? Floyd, can
Hello?
You hear me? Go ahead with
yes,
your question.
I can hear you. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Actually, y'all did answer a lot of what I had in mind. mainly my left eye. I've got a lot of floaters and flashers. And it's getting to where I have to wear sunglasses almost all the time now, even indoors. And I was wondering, like, is that, like, specifically the macula that would be causing that? Or are there other things? Or, and, like, fluorescent lights especially. Or, like, when it's overcast, it's almost impossible. It feels like something's, like I got a hair in front of my eye. And aside from, I'm supposed to be eating healthy and whatnot, is there anything I can do to actually reverse this trend?
The flashes and floaters, I'm not sure, are actually related to your symptoms of glare and light sensitivity that you're having. How old are you, Floyd?
I am 32 years old.
32, you're a young guy, so you shouldn't have any cataract, but typically the symptoms that you're describing of glare and light sensitivity would come from some abnormality in the anterior segment of the eye with the cornea, the lens, the iris. Maybe some inflammation in the front of your eye, that would need to be evaluated. The flashes and floaters, if you're actually having, you're pretty young to actually have flashes and floaters, but it's not impossible, and certainly if you are having that, then it should be evaluated to make sure that you're not having a retinal problem. You can get sort of flashes with migraine auras. So migraine headache is a very common disease process and results from spasm of the blood vessels in the brain. And sometimes the headache is preceded by sort of a blurring of the vision and flashing lights coming across the vision. And this can last anywhere from a few minutes to almost an hour. So you want to differentiate between retinal flashes and floaters and a migraine aura, and you would need to see an ophthalmologist to do that.
All right. Next caller for Health Matters this evening is Joy, calling from Vivian. Joy, good evening to you, and go ahead with your question.
Thank you. About 2 years ago, I developed lumps over the tear gland areas of both eyes. I had seen an ophthalmologist. He recommended that he see an eye surgeon, and this eye surgeon said that these what lumps that felt hard to me felt soft to him. He did a biopsy, had a biopsy done, and it showed no malignancy. He said they may be caused by a number of different things, possibly tapeworms, which seemed out of reason to me. I'd always thought tapeworms were a gut worm, but I've since, just in the last few months, have seen another doctor, an ophthalmologist, who said that described these as I forgot what term she used, but I did not tell her that the surgeon had suggested that possibly these were caused by tapeworms, among a number of other things. Is it possible that tapeworms can get in the eye area? And I've since that time developed an extreme dry eye condition. This surgeon said that he decided that I had blepharitis and recommended that I use hot packs on my eyes several times a day.
Okay. We're getting close to the end of the show here. What about the issue with tapeworms?
So, Joy, I think you and the most recent eye surgeon are onto something. I personally have also never heard of tapeworms affecting the eyeballs or the eyelids. You know, bumps on the eyelids can be any number of things. The suggestion of blepharitis is a very good suggestion. It's extremely common, especially as folks get older.
What is that exactly?
The oil glands in the eye, it's inflammation of the eyelids and at the eyelid margins. So the oil glands in the eyelid margins, as you get older, tend to, instead of secreting a thin natural oil secretion that helps to coat the eye and prevent the tears from evaporating, that oil gets thicker and congested in those glands, and that can lead to a sterile inflammation in the glands that we call styes or chalazions. And people that have this condition are also predisposed to getting dry eye, again, because those oils are important in preventing your tears from evaporating and keeping your cornea well hydrated. So if the oils are congested in your eyelid and they're not getting to the cornea, then the eye can dry out and lead to pretty severe dry eye disease. And that would be the warm compresses is probably a good suggestion. But there are also some different antibiotics and other techniques that can assist with that condition.
All right. We're getting pretty close to the end of our show. My guest, Dr. Brian Lusk of Lusk Eye Specialists here in Shreveport. We have just about a minute or two. Are there any new developments, anything that's around the corner here that has you particularly excited?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's always new technology coming along, constantly developing. Our job is to evaluate that technology and implement it when we feel that not only it is safe, but it improves outcomes. Right now, we have a machine in our office that allows us to take a very high-definition picture of the cornea. It's kind of like taking a CT scan of your cornea. And the reason why it's such a good piece of technology is that it allows us to customize our treatments, whether it's LASIK surgery or choosing the right lens implant for a cataract surgery patient. Everyone's eye and everyone's cornea is different. And so the key is being able to assess those differences and pick from these range of implants that will best benefit a particular patient.
All right. As I said, my guest, Dr. Brian Lusk of Lusk Eye Specialists in Shreveport. Brian, I want to thank you again for being here. Thank you for filling in for your dad at the last minute. Really appreciate that.
Thank you guys for having me at Red River Radio. It's been great.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should always consult a physician or health professional. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance from Wally Derleth, Henry Edwards, and Daniel Gordy. I'm your host, Kermit Poling. I want to thank you for being with us this evening. This is your public radio station, Red River Radio.